Okay, we are on sheet 42, and as I said to you before, I've combined the last two sheets into one because I feel that you're capable of speedy reading and speedy understanding. And therefore, this will be the third and final set in this particular set. Next time we'll go on to something else. I want to look at the issue of Midrash, and what is Midrash, and what isn't Midrash, which is really, in terms of Makora Tatora, the sources of Torah, really important, because a lot of people quote Midrashim a lot as a source of the different kinds, and we have to work out what kind of source it is, how to read it. Skills in learning Midrash are very, very critical, and therefore I think this course needs to deal with that as well. It can't just deal with Halacha, but for now we're still in the Chumash. Today's class is going to be a little bit controversial, or at least it's going to raise some issues which some people regard as controversial. There's always a debate that you have as to whether it's worthwhile raising controversial issues or keeping them quiet and hoping they never cause problems. This is actually a machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid in Hilchos Tshuva, which has nothing to do with today's sheet, but in Hilchos Tshuva the Rambam asks a question, which is, you know, how can a person really have free will if God has total knowledge of everything that's going to be? And he answers and he says, look, at the end of the day, this question is beyond human understanding, because to understand this, you have to understand God, and you can't really answer this question. It's an illegitimate question on a certain level. And the Ravid comes in there and he says, that's not acceptable. You can't raise difficult questions to people that never thought of them before, and then not give them good answers. Better, says the Ravid, not to raise the questions, and most people will never think about it. And at least that way you won't have troubled people walking around who, now you've raised the question, feel that they need an answer and they never thought of it before. And obviously the Rambam doesn't agree with that. The Rambam feels if it's an important question, it needs to be raised, even if sometimes good questions are better than bad answers. Good questions are good, and therefore there's always a question as to whether you should raise. Part of the purpose of this course is to expose you at this stage to issues which I'm pretty sure will come up over the years. You're going to places where they talk about academic things, you're going to Stern, and you're going to other places, and you're going to meet people that have access to and have looked at these kind of issues, and read forum that deal with these kind of issues. I've seen people in the Beit Medrash reading Amnon Bazak's book, which I mentioned here on the sheet, Ada Yom Hazeh, which deals with these issues. And as I said in the first class, the question of how to connect academia and Torah study is a very interesting and pressing one, especially if you're going to Torah Omada type places like Stern and YU and what have you. And how to deal with biblical criticism, which is not really what this shiur is about, but how to even address these issues when people are questioning, you know, was the Torah really written by one author, and was it written by Moshe Rabbeinu, was it written Alpi Hashem? Obviously we have a religious response to this, but how we deal with people who raise these questions has to be thought through a little bit. And therefore, what I've given you in this sheet is a resolution on some level of the two questions that we've been dealing with, which, let me remind you what they are. The Rambam, in his Eik Ikka, made two statements about the Jewish approach to Torah Min HaShamayim. He said, number one, we believe the Torah we have today in our hands is the same Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Number two, we believe that every single letter of the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu had was given to him directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They are the two statements that the Rambam said. Now, on the first statement, which we've been dealing with in the last class, which is, we believe that every single letter in the Sefer that we have today is the same as the Sefer that Moshe Rabbeinu had. We said, that's not so straightforward. And that's really not so controversial, because there are many, many sources that deal with the fact that over time there may be some questions that came in here and there. For example, we saw right at the beginning where Yaakov Weinberg from Nashville, Baltimore, said already on the Rambam's Eikka that you can't take that absolutely literally, that it's every single letter, because there are some minute differences, and we traced that historically through. We talked about the Master Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, that they had during the first Beis HaMikdash, that Yoshiyahu HaMelech found, and they had that whole rereading of the Master Torah. We talked about how that was lost. And in the second Beis HaMikdash, Ezra had to deal with slight variance in text. I'm just reviewing what we talked about last time. And we talked about the fact that Chazal say clearly that by the time of the end of the Amoraim, when they're not making any droshes anymore based on the letters, but by that time they felt that they weren't Boki in Malei V'Choser. Remember we talked about Malei V'Choser? Whether the word is written Omer, like this, or Omer, written like this. They said already that they didn't feel as though they were Bekiim, experts in Malei V'Choser. And therefore they weren't able to know exactly the exact spelling. So on that particular issue, I wanted to resolve that today and show you what the halacha was, and how we deal with that, which is not going to take us very long. So let's deal with that first, spend 10 minutes on that, and then deal with the rest. First of all, even when it comes to Rashi, you saw the point of this first Rashi in number 1 and 2. Rashi quotes a pasuk or comments on a pasuk from last week's parsha, okay, from Parsha's Truma, where he talks about the look at the pasuk. V'nati lecha sham, God says to Moshe, I'm going to speak to you. V'dibati itcha mi'ara kaporis mi'beishne akruvim asher ala arnevus et kol asher atzaveltcha. I'm going to tell you what you have to tell the Jewish people. Rashi comes in number 2 and says, quotes this pasuk. Ve'et kol asher atzaveltcha, and everything that you're going to teach them. He says, Harivav de yisayir of a tzvela. This vav at the beginning of ve'et is not meant to be translated. It kind of gets subsumed within the posik. It doesn't mean and. You do basically don't translate it. Ukemo har be'mikra. There are many examples of vavs like that in the Torah. What's the problem? There's no vav in the posik. Rashi is commenting on a letter that's not there in our Chumash. Have you ever noticed anything like this before? Not there. The old school Chumash is very open. He said, oh, Rashi just had a slightly different variation in the text of the Sefer Torah. Interesting. I would have thought the old scroll Chumash would cover it up. No, nothing to cover up, because it's really not controversial. They've ever said every now and then with certain vows and certain yuds and things like that, there are slightly different texts of the Sefer Torah. And Rashi was working off a very slightly different one. There's a famous one also with tzitzis. With the issues, remember where he brings the gematria of tzitzis, and he brings the famous one, sadi yud, taf, and then he adds up to 600, plus the 5, plus the 8, but the word tzitzis in our Sefer Torah doesn't have the two yuds. We talked about that first semester, when we were talking about something else, I can't remember what. Anyway, so comes along the Rambam in number 3 and says, look, the Bishur is a shibush god b'chol asforim. I found a lot of different sforim around. Really, the Rambam is not so much talking about words here, it's talking about the psuchos and the stumos. You know what the psuchos and the stumos? The gaps in the parashas. Sometimes, is this the right kind of thing? Yeah. Sometimes there's a gap, like a tab, in the middle of the line. That's called a stuma, a kind of closed gap. And sometimes it's like a shift. Like, he goes like this, and then he starts a new one. Yeah? That's the psucha and that's the stuma. So he says, I found a lot of different Sefer Torahs with different versions of this. And he says, a lot of them have got a bit mixed up by his time. When did the Rambam live?
After Rashi,
12th century, etc. V'chein ba'alim asoyres shekosvim u'machabrim lohidia psuchas v'astumos. And he says, lots of people have been writing how exactly to write a Sefer Torah, where to put the psuchas v'astumos. Nechalakim advarim, they seem to disagree with each other too much, he says. Advarim eilu. What sefer are we really going to take as being the ultimate one? And again, we're not arguing about whole paragraphs or passages or even letters so much here. We're arguing about the pagination. I wanted to write for you now in my Mishnah Torah, he says, the following. I want to give you a definitive version of all the pagination, how the Torah works, the Turas Hashiras and how the Shiras work, because you know the Shiras, there are different kinds of Shiras. Some of the Shiras are written, some of the Shiras are written like this, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Shirat Ha'azinu is written like this, yeah. Some of the Shiras are written like this, Shirat Hayam is written like that. So exactly how you work out all the pagination there. He said, I want to define it for you so you have a clear text. So you're going to now be able to write all the right Sefer Torahs correctly. And what Sefer have I chosen to be the most reliable Sefer? But Dvarim Elu, who Sefer Hayadua, the Mitzrayim, it's a well-known Sefer that is currently in Egypt. Of course, he was also in Egypt. Shehu Kailal Arba Ve'eshim Svarim, it contains all 24 Svarim of the Torah. Shehaya B'Yerushalayim, it used to be originally in Yerushalayim, okay? Mikam Ashanim. Lahagia Mimenu Hasfarim. It used to be used as a key base text to correct other texts. Va'alav Hayar Kolsev, when everybody relied on this, the Fisher Higiu Ben Asher, because Ben Asher was the one that put it together. The Dikdek Boy Shanim Raharbeh, and he spent many years looking into it. The Kupamim Rabois, and it was looked over many times. Kemoshe Etiku Va'alav Samachti, on that Sefer I've relied. The Sefer Toshi Kasafti Kilchasa. What is that Sefer? That Ben Asher, we said at the end of the last session, was one of the Masoretes, the Masoranim, okay? He was the one that wrote the Aleppo Codex. The Aleppo Codex, which was seen by the Rambam as the definitive text in all respects, in pagination, in letters, in Malei V'Chosa of the Chumash, the Rambam says, I'm going to use the Aleppo Codex, which used to be in Israel, then was in Egypt by the time of the Rambam, became known as the Aleppo Codex because it then moved to where?
Syria, Aleppo,
and Evie, as you mentioned to me here, her great grandfather's brother-in-law was the one that ran into the burning shul in Syria in 1947, dressed as an Arab, and rescued the Aleppo Codex. Unfortunately, after much of it had been burnt at the beginning for the Chumash, we don't have all 24 books anymore in the Aleppo Codex. He rescued it, smuggled it out, and it was smuggled out of Israel. It's a whole story, it's an amazing story. You should read about the Aleppo Codex and how they rescued it and how they got it. I have a whole book about it at home. I've just forgotten the name right now. I think it's called The Aleppo Codex. But it's in the Israel Museum. Underneath the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's like some steps that go down, and there's the Aleppo Codex. So the Rambam says that's what I'm using in order to give my definitive Sefer Torah, and therefore he chooses that. That is not what we use for our Sefer Torah today. Carry on. Yes? How does the Rambam know that? We'll talk about that at the end. At the end of the day, the Rambam hasn't got Nevuah, and he isn't able to connect into the Master Torah, but he has looked at the Aleppo Codex, and he knows the background. He says this is the most accurate one that we can come up with right now.
It doesn't say completely accurate.
Okay, you're right. He doesn't. Very good. So that's one of the reasons why Rav Yaakov Weinberg, when he quotes the Rambam's 8th Iker, where the Rambam makes these two statements, number one, that every letter is exactly what we had from Moshe, and number two, that Moshe got the whole thing from God, he says really the Rambam's focused on the second one, not the first one. Because how can you really say the first one? Because the Rambam himself says there's, like, exactly. So it's 99.9, you know? Okay, good. So, exactly. So Rav Yaakov Weinberg says there that the Rambam was lavd after on the first one, but the second one is, and you saw from the Rambam that his main focus was on not for 1 minute thinking that any pasuk was added later, or even by Moshe Rabbeinu. The exact text of the Sefer Torah is less of a theological concern. Yes? What?
But even though he did become one of his Ikarim, people who read it will probably...
Okay, and maybe also you have to ask who the Ikarim were written for. The Rambam says explicitly in the Moreh Nevuchim that the Ikarim are written for people that haven't really gone into it in so much depth. It's a guide there to make sure that everybody has the basic understanding of what a Jew has to believe. Okay, and also because maybe the Rambam could also say that the Aleppo Codex was, as far as we're concerned, maybe it was the original one. I mean, if you can't say that it wasn't. You can't prove definitively that it was, but the Rambam says the accuracy is so good as to be almost perfect, and we'll see Rav Lichtman at the end where he talks about that in his English piece. Yeah.
Fine, it's 99%, and that's really wonderful, but, like, we claim
100. No, so who said? So that's the thing. I'm giving you this shear to show you that we may not, actually, the people who say we claim 100 are not correct. And I don't think there's any source for that, apart from the Torah Codes people, I'm not interested in. People who turn around and say 100, maybe 99 is as good as 100. You know, when you buy 100%, the half deal, when you buy 100% orange juice in the supermarket, it could easily be 2% not orange juice. Which, by the way, legally... I'm sorry, Joy, if that ruins your emunah in orange juice. But, by the way, in Hilchas Pesach, this is a very big deal. We have this in England many years ago. They can say on the packaging 100% pure orange juice, no added ingredients, and it can be 2% glucose sugar added, and the glucose can be chometz. It can be chometz gomor. And it's not even bottled b'shishim. And therefore, you can be drinking, say, it says on the packet 100% pure orange juice, and it actually is also as chometz on Pesach. Okay, that's a separate issue about the orange juice, but not for now. But I'm saying, when it says 100%, maybe... that. The Chazal who are darshaning every letter, then every letter is every letter. But for us, I don't think this is so controversial. Yeah. What? You go.
Why don't, obviously we don't have the whole Torah, but we have so much of the Torah quoted in the Gemara as bringing that halacha. Why don't we go by that?
Oh, so that was already the Radvaz on the last sheet that we didn't go into great details. And he said that, look, sometimes Chazal's quotes of the Sefer Torah are different from ours. And we have now a question, slightly different. And we have a question. Number one, do we trust the way that the Gemara quotes the Pesukim? Because the Gemara Torah Shebal Peh, it's not meant to be taken as a definitive quote of the Torah Shebal Peh. No, it's not. No, it's not. It quotes the Pesukim and he expects you to go and look it up in the Sefer Torah. It's sometimes he didn't quote the whole pasuk. The Gemara often quotes half a pasuk and says v'goymer. The Gemara is not Torah Shebichtav, and the Gemara therefore was originally an oral text, and it's not to be used as a definitive text for Torah Shebichtav. Apparently, there the Radvaz says that sometimes when the Gemara quotes the Sefer Torah and makes a big halachic deal over it, like sukkos, with, without the Vav, etc., on which halacha is based, so he suggests that we should go with the Gemara text of the Chumash. But in other places where it's not halachically relevant, then maybe not. But at the end of the day, the Gemara should not be our source of Torah Shebichtav. It should be our source of Torah Shebaal Peh.
If they're making dinim on the letter of the law, then clearly they have the right letter.
Right. So that's what the Radvaz says at the end of the day. Yeah. But 9 out of 10 times... We have 99 out of 100 times it's exactly the same. We're not talking about major discrepancies. So where there are discrepancies, the question is which ones and which way to go. You had a question, Nathaniel?
Yeah, I have a comment about
orange. Okay, well later on maybe. Now we'll go over the papers. I don't want to spend too much time on this first thing because this is the less, if you like, controversial one. Look over on page number 2. Let me just introduce you to Rav Meir Abulafia. Excuse me. I will come to say my name in just a minute.
Okay.
Let's talk about Rav Meir Abulafia. Have you heard of Rav Meir Abulafia? He's called the Ratma, not to be confused with the Ratma, the Ramon, really, if you're Ashkenazi, who is in Krakow. Rav Meir Abulafia lived in Spain in the 1100s, and he also dealt with this issue that the Rambam deals with of many Sifrei Torah being incorrectly copied in his own time, and he wanted to give a standard text, and he basically didn't follow the Aleppo Codex, which is interesting, but he researched it and thought about it and looked at the majority of scrolls from many different places, like we saw Ezra did back in the second base on Mikdash, and he gave a text of the Sefer Torah, which after a lot of research he felt was the most accurate text. He wrote a sefer there, the Maserik Siag LaTorah, and it's Rav Meir Abulafia's text that all the Ashkenazim and all the Sfaradim use today. That's why the Ashkenazim and the Sfaradim have the same text. You cannot use the Ashkenazi and the Sfarim having the same text as proof that we've all got the text from Moshe Rabbeinu, because at the end of the day we all use Rav Meir Abulafia's text from the 12th century. The Taimanim didn't take that. They went more with the Rambam and the Aleppo Codex, and that's why there are a number of minor discrepancies, and I brought you, if you're interested, in number 4 at the bottom, in note 4 at the bottom of the page, I brought you about 15 or so slight differences, and again, we're usually talking about either sort of the way that things are written. Sometimes letters are written large in the Sefer Torah. So the difference between the Rambams and ours is sometimes that rest of the letters are small, and ours is written large, or ours is written small, and theirs is written large, or it's a male v'choser. You can read in your own time the exact differences between all of these particular cases. Some of them are better known than others, but you're dealing with pretty small variations there. Sometimes it's just pagination, whether it's it's a psucho or a stoma, etc., etc. Fine.
But some of these are letters are written larger or smaller.
Yeah.
Rashi has a whole thing about when there's large letters, and it means there was a separate Sefer Torah. That's a big deal.
No, you're thinking of the nuns.
Yeah.
In the, you know. Okay. It's not a small deal, but it's not a big deal. Again, compare this, and I'm not trying to denigrate anybody or put anyone down, but compare this with the number of variant texts that the New Testament has, La Havdil.
Something else. I don't need to say that it's better than Christianity.
I agree.
It's good as it is.
I agree. But if you're looking at the degree of accuracy that we have, I think that's the degree of accuracy that any reasonable person can happily live with. If you demand 100% accuracy for anything in life, you'll never make any decision on anything. You will not have anything like this level of certainty on the husband you marry, the career you choose, the place that you live, and the house that you buy. You won't have anything close to this. So this has to be 100%. Look at this. Look at Rav Moshe Lisman, number 7. You can look at this afterwards, but you know, Rav Moshe Lichtman quotes Rav Mordechai Breuer. Rav Mordechai Breuer is an important person you need to know about. Rav Mordechai Breuer was an academic. He was also a major rabbinical figure through the middle of the 20th century. He came to Eretz Yisrael. And you can read in your own time what he did. He did an academic comparison, created what he calls here the eclectic text. He took different texts and did different comparisons. I'm not getting into the whole thing, and you can look up not Moshe Lichtman, David Lichtman, excuse me. Rav David, you can look up his thing online. I gave you the reference there. He comes out with Rav Mordechai Breuer. Rav Mordechai Breuer is the one that produced or is inputted into the Daf Mikra set upstairs. Yeah? Which gives all the different variations of all the different Girsot in Tanakh, etc., etc. And at the end of the day, he, by this academic method, he came up with 12 letters of a question out of 304,805. 12 letters. He didn't just use 5 Torahs. He picked 5 Torahs of which represented different, if you like, Maseras, which is very hard to find because everyone's coming off the Rabbi Abulafia these days, or the Aleppo Codex. He also pushed in the Aleppo Codex as a 6th, as a 5th rather. He used 4 and then the Aleppo Codex. And he came up with 12 questions out of 304,805. As far as I'm concerned, that's 100%. Okay, it's 99.99961%. Okay? I'm certainly not going to lose any sleep over that.
No.
And you can read that. You can check it out online. You can see if you agree with it or don't agree with it, etc. Just go back to page number 2 for a second. Let me just mention another couple of things before we get into the second question. The Shulchan Aruch Paskens Halacha Lamait Imnim says number 4. Imnim says tells the Sefer Torah B'Shas Kriya. If you're reading in the Sefer Torah and they find a mistake, this can happen. Okay, I was called up the other day. There was a letter which was questionable in the Sefer Torah. Mosif Sefer Torah Cheres, you bring out another Sefer Torah, and then you read it again, or whatever. There are halachas as to whether you call someone else up, would you make a brocha, you know, again. That's not for them. Says the Ramah, the Hadamoy Tzina Cher, that when you, the halacha that you bring out a second Sefer Torah, that's Kishinim Zatoskong, only when you may find a clear mistake. You know, it's meant to say Sheini and it says Shlishi. Or it's meant to say Sheini and it says, you know, Sheli. Or something, whatever it is, there's a clear letter which is wrong, or a letter which is touching another letter clearly, which makes it invalid. Aval mishum chaseres v'yaseres ein lahoitich. But if you find a Sefer Torah where it writes Omer instead of Omer with a vowel without a vowel, it says you don't need to bring a second Sefer Torah out. Shein Sefer Torah shelanu meduyak in kol kach, because our Sefer Torah are not so meduyak. Shneimar, okay, she'atu that we can say she'acherid ye yosek kosher, that the second one will be more kosher. And if you really have no other option, that you only eat and have a completely positive Sefer Torah, you have no one that can correct it. By the way, correcting a Sefer Torah is very easy. Obviously not on Shabbos. But if you have someone that has a quill and has a bit of ink, if there's a sofa in the audience on a Thursday or whatever, and you find a mistake, you just go up and then it corrects it. Correcting mezuzahs and tefillin is very much harder because you have to write them in order. Say that the mezuzahs and tefillin cloth have to be written, you can't write the letters out of order. So if you find a mistake in a tefillin or a mezuzah cloth that you've written, you have to rub out all the letters that you've written back to the mistake, and then write it all again from there. And of course, if you hit the Shem Hashem between now where you are and the mistake, it's all over.
So
because you can't erase the Shem Hashem. That's one of the reasons why mezuzahs and tefillin are quite expensive. For what they are. Sifrei Torah are much cheaper if you think of the size to mezuzahs. You know, if a mezuzah costs $100 and a Sefer Torah costs $25,000, a Sefer Torah is very much more than 250 times bigger than a mezuzah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. So ladylike. Right. Anyway, so at the end of the day, the Shulchan Aruch Paskens, there are more Paskens that ask Sifrei Torah if there's a fault in it. But the Eved, maybe it's no less more possible than the next guy. And there's a machlokes. I brought you the note of Yehuda. He says it's not that we feel we don't have the right Sefer Torah. It is a source that I asked you to skip in number 6. He says that actually it's just that we don't think that the other one will necessarily have any more accuracy than this one. Whereas other people like the Shagas Aryeh say no. The whole point is that we don't have the 100% Sefer Torah. That's why he says there is no mitzvah today incumbent on people to write a Sefer Torah. Everyone always asks this question. There is a mitzvah d'oraisa, one of the 613 mitzvahs. I'm not talking about reading, laying in shul. One of the 613 mitzvahs is to write the Sefer Torah. So why do people do that today?
We
gave
money.
Yeah.
So who said that's good enough? There's a mitzvah to shake a lulav. So I gave money, someone else to shake a lulav. No, who says that? It says in the Sefer, it says, write a Sefer Torah. So one of the famous understandings of that is the Rosh, who says that the purpose of writing a Sefer Torah is so you'll have something to read, to learn. because that's how they learned. So the mitzvah today of writing a Sefer Torah is fulfilled through buying Sforim. I tell that to my wife all the time. She says, more Sforim? I said, darling, sweetheart, it's a mitzvah, d'oraisa. I've got to have something to learn. She says, well, can't you learn the other 20,000 Sforim that you've already got, or whatever? Not 20,000, 2,000. She says, yeah, but
2,000
Sforim. Well, I don't know, I never counted them. Come to my house and count them if you've got nothing else to do one day. Actually, I need someone to catalogue my Sforim. If you're into cataloguing, then that's a nice job. But anyway, that's not for now. Shagas Aryeh turns around and says, no, the reason that we don't have an active mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah today is because now that we don't have that 100% accuracy, okay, it's 99.99961. Shagas Aryeh was someone you haven't come across before. I brought him in the Who's Who. The Shagas Aryeh lived in the 18th century, Rav Aryeh Leib ben Asher Gunzberg. And he lived in Lithuania. He's actually, if you're into yeshiva learning and Iyun and things like that, Shagas Aryeh comes up quite a lot. Anyway, just one last word. One of the things we use today a lot is the Mikros Gedolos. You've all used Mikros Gedolos. You all bought them at the beginning of the year. Where did that come from? So it's an interesting story which I haven't got time to go into right now, but the Mikros Gedolos was first produced in the early 1500s when they started printing. It was produced under the supervision of this fellow of Yaakov Ben Chaim Ibn Adoniyah. And actually online, I should have brought you the reference, you can get, he wrote a very, very, very long introduction to the Mikros Gedolos, which is not printed in all of them, it's printed in some of them, about how he did it and how he made it, etc. And then he converted later to Christianity. Which,
why?
We have to ask him, I'm like, why?
It was the 99.9%.
No, no, that's not the reason. All sorts of people had all sorts of situations in those days. A lot of Jews were converting to Christianity in the early 1500s in Spain. That was the time, a lot of people were being forced. There was a lot of anusim, etc., etc. What's interesting is it was printed by Bomberg. I mentioned the Bomberg Shach to you before. Mm-hmm. This is a Chumash printed by Bomberg. It was the King James authorized version, Lahavdil, which was one of the most famous Bibles ever printed. The Protestant Bible printed by King James. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
King James I of England, living in the early 1600s, was based upon this Mikros Gedolos. Various different errors were corrected over the years by different people, but at the end of the day, you will sometimes find a slight discrepancy between the Sefer Torah and the Mikros Gedolos, because at the end of the day, the Mikros Gedolos is coming off a slightly different text than the Sefer Torah is coming off the Remeya Abu Lafia's, etc., etc. But again, mostly in Mali Bechase. If you're interested in this, this is the last I'm going to say on this, but if you're interested in this, as I said, the Torah Chaim Chumash set, Mikros Gedolos set, is the one to read. If you can sit down and spend hours of many happy research, research hours looking at the different Girsos and here and there, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, no one really loses any sleep over this, because it's very clearly documented. Everyone knows about it. It's in the Chazal, Rishonim, Achronim. Beautiful. And we're very pleased with the accuracy we have. Maybe not 100, but it's pretty close. The second question is, however, much more controversial, and we'll see that coming out right now. The second thing the Rambam talked about was the idea that every single posuk in the Sefer Torah was given by Moshe, given to Moshe Rabbeinu by God. What's the matter? I'm on now page 4. Okay, page 4. The Ibn Ezra, let's do this quickly, left you with this very unclear hint. He said, if you understand the side of the Shnei Masar, the secret of the 12, what were the 12? The last sukkim where the Gemara debates, were they written by Yeshua? And if so, how? Were they written by Moshe? And if so, how? If you understand the side of the Shnei Masar, you'll get an insight into the Torah. What is he talking about? So, let's look at something he explicitly says. Look in the Pasukim number 9. There's a Pasukim Parshas Vayishlach. It says like this. The Eile HaMalachim. These are the kings of Seir. Okay, non-Jewish neighbors. Asher Malchu Ba'eretz Adam, who ruled in Eretz Adam. Lifnei Malach Melech Lifnei Yisrael. Before there was a king for the Jewish people. Pasukim the Chumash. Now, what's the problem with that? No. What's the problem with that pasuk? Have you ever seen that pasuk before? It's there in Vayishlach. I promise you, I didn't make it up. What is the apparent problem with that pasuk? Come on, ladies, this is not complicated. Yeah, who was the first king in Eretz Yisrael? Shaul. When did he live? How many years after Moshe Rabbeinu? Roughly. A few hundred.
Yeah.
300-400. So the Pasuk in the Torah writes, these are the kings who ruled in Edom before there was a king in Israel. Okay, so that Pasuk needs some analysis. Like, what does that mean? What's that talking about? Who is the king in Israel? Is it Shaul? Is it maybe Moshe Rabbeinu? Because Moshe Rabbeinu had a din of a melech. He was the first ruler of Am Yisrael when they went to Har Sinai. Which king is he talking about? So the Ibn Ezra comes in there. The same Ibn Ezra that's dropped us these little hints of, if you know my secret, then you'll have access to hidden things. He says, Yesh Oimrim, ki bederech nevuah nichtav al dois haparsha. You could say it was given with nevuah. You don't have a problem that the Torah is given with nevuah. That's the whole Torah. It's given with nevuah. It knew about Shaul HaMelech. It prophesies many times things that are going to happen in hundreds of years. Look at the end of Sefer Dvarim. Hazinu. Parshas Nitzavim, it says in the end you're going to do this, you're going to go off the derech, you're going to come back, you're going to do tshuva. The Sefer Torah has no problem predicting what's going to be in hundreds of years from now. So you could easily say that is a totally theologically reasonable position. V'yitzchaki amar b'sifroi, and don't think this is Rashi. It's not. Yitzchaki is a Karaite that he quotes only to rubbish his opinion, okay? By the way, the Ibn Ezra was very controversial himself, that he quotes Karaites and sometimes says, that's a nice pshat, which people didn't like. And sometimes he quotes Karaites, mostly to say that they're basically, you know, well, completely the wrong end of the stick and it's nonsense. But he won't have a problem quoting a good chat from a Karaite if he thinks he has one. This is a machlokas that people have today. Remember did I talk about this? Remember the Herz Chumash? Did I mention the Herz Chumash?
Oh yeah, I was conservative.
No, he wasn't.
No.
Well, you might think he was. The Americans all say the Herz Chumash was conservative because Chief Rabbi Herz originally was in JTS. But Chief Rabbi Herz was the Chief Rabbi of the United Kingdom. And the British Commonwealth. Actually, the British Empire, as it was in those days. And he quotes all the time from different people. From priests, from biblical critics and scholars. And he says, look, if it's a nice chat, it's a nice chat. Needless to say, the Art Scroll Chumash, which has now replaced it in most shuls, doesn't do that. You won't find in the Art Scroll commentary a nice quote from Reverend so-and-so down the road in his Episcopalian, whatever it is. You won't find that. Because there's different approaches, but the Ibn Ezra is happy to quote a Karaite. Here he quotes a Karaite, but he says he's talking nonsense. Look at number 10. The parsha was written, this particular pasuk was written later in the time of Yehoshaphat. Upirish Hadoras Kirutainu. And he goes through and he explains the different generations. The Hachikrakimo Yitzchak. And I say to you, that's why he's called Yitzchak, this Yitzchaki guy. Kikol Shemeya Yitzchaklo, because everyone who reads this will laugh. What a load of nonsense. If you think this was Rashi, by the way, this would be a little bit troubling. It wasn't definitely Rashi. Ki Amar, because he says, he quotes something that he says is ridiculous. Ki Hadad hu Hadad Haidomi. He quotes this Hadad, he says he was the Hadad Haidomi. Ba'ama ki mehetavel achot tach panchas. Okay. B'chalila chalila. So the Ibn Ezra gets very upset. God forbid, she'adava kamoshe diber, al-yimei Yoshaphat. B'sifroi roi li saref. The Sefer is heretical, it should be burnt. You can't say this pasuk was written by Yehoshaphat. It's not possible. Chalila, chalila. Okay, that sounds very true. So what's he talking about, Yisod Hayud Bet? What is that Yisod Hayud Bet? So if you look here, one of the most famous examples of this is in number 12. The Ibn Ezra says, Haknani Avar, if I mentioned this two sessions ago, when it says the Canaanim was then in the country, and this is problematic, because at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Canaan was still in the country. And the Ibn Ezra says, maybe it means, like Rashi says, that they had by then arrived in the country. Okay? But maybe it means that im einenu kein, he says at the end, if that's not the pshat, yesh lo yisod. There is a secret here. The hamaskil yidom, and if you're clever, you'll keep quiet. What's he talking about? So have a look in the Tzachnat Panech. The Tzachnat Panech is a commentary on the Ibn Ezra. It was written by Rav Yosef ben Eliezer HaSefardi in Spain in the 14th century. And he says, it's very clear what the Ibn Ezra means. Look at number 13. Huramas Soidai B'tchiles Parshas Eledvarim. Number 13. The Ibn Ezra is hinting to a Sod, to a foundation, a secret that he gives at the beginning of Tvarim, which is what we saw above. Okay? Uperishohu, ki eich amabakan milach az. How could it say that the Canaanim were then in the land? Shemashma az, which sounds like they were then in the land, haya. Aval ata eimenuva, but now they're not in the land. Moshe Rabbeinu's time, they were in the land. Hello, Moshe kasa v'satayra. Surely Moshe wrote the Torah, b'yamav haita ha'aris b'yad ha'kanani, and they were exactly the people in the land. So why does it say the Canaanim were then in the land? Says the Tzafna Paneach, no. The Fizenira, shalai kasa Moshe zoysan melaka. The Ibn Ezra is telling us that this particular pasuk was not written by Moshe. Rak Yeshua wrote it. Is it acceptable to say that Yeshua wrote some psukim in the Torah? Well, the last eight, we saw a debate. Or echad mishar ha-neviim kasvua. Oh, that's interesting. One of the neviim later wrote this pasuk in the Torah, says the Tzafna Paneach. Va'acha sheyesh lanu la'amin b'divrei kabbalah. And since we are required as part of our religion to believe that nevuah is true, u'b'divrei nevuah. Nevuah is nevuah, it's coming me'es Hashem. Why do I care if Moshe wrote this or if a Navi wrote this? Since they're all coming from Hashem, it's through Nevuah. I'm not saying some other guy, Yehoshaphat, wrote this, or in the time of Yehoshaphat someone said this. Meaning, why can the Ibn Ezra be so stark against Yitzchaki the Karite in number 10, and yet according to Tzafos Panach is very happy to accept that a later Navi wrote a posuk in the Torah? How do you put those two together? So it seems that the Ibn Ezra, according to Tzafos Panach, is saying that we don't not like the Rambam, is saying that you could have a later Navi that came and said something and added to the Torah, but you can't have this statement that someone else in the time of Yehoshaphat put that in. That's unacceptable. The Torah is Nevuah, either Nevuah's Moshe Rabbeinu, or the Nevuah of a later authentic Navi that has been proved as a Navi through the Torah system. Look at number 14. Says Rav Moshe Almosino. Rav Moshe Almosino lived in Greece in the 16th century. Then came Huloita Chensha Amazem Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Shalom. It can't be that Moshe Rabbeinu is also perished on the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra is telling us that Moshe couldn't have written this. Kibiyamavadain Haita Biyad Kanan, because the Kananim were still in charge then. And Shinama Yeshua or Ezra. He suggests Ezra. Was Ezra Hanavi? Was Ezra Hanavi? Yes, he was. Sure. Ezra was one of the Nevi'im beginning of the second base on Mikdash. Okay? Ezra came in, Kosov came. Vazer, sorry, this is his principle, this is his secret. Now, it seems clear, therefore, according to these commentaries on the Ibn Ezra, that unlike the Rambam, who insists that every pasuk in the Torah is Me'es Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu, there are some psukim which are from Moshe, and there are a few psukim which are from later Nevuah.
Isn't Ezra after Yehoshaphat?
Yeah, but it's nothing to do with before or after. It's to do with Navi or not Navi.
No, but if it's Navi in the time of Yehoshaphat added it in,
but he didn't say that. He said someone in the time of Yehoshaphat added this in. That's why it's ridiculous. You have to be clear if it's coming from Nebu or not. Now, was this any kind of mainstream position in the Rishonim? And the answer is definitely not. The Rambam's position is clearly the mainstream position in the Rishonim. And the Rambam, I would say, is clearly the halacha as paskened in the Achronim. If anyone says to you that, you know something, some psukim are written in the Sefer Torah from a later Nevi'im, most people will turn around and say to you, that's apikorsis, that's kira. And clearly, according to the Rambam, it is kfir. However, it is not possible to say that it doesn't exist as a shita in the Rishonim. Now, you can have a shita in the Rishonim that today will be considered to be kfira. For example, there's a shita in the Gemara that there's never going to be a Mashiach. That all the chances have gone, and Mashiach's over. That's it. Finished. Hillel. Not Hillel, the famous Hillel. The younger Hillel Nasir later on, he says, like, that's it, we've missed Mashiach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to redeem the Jewish people without a Mashiach. It's not that there's never going to be a Geula, God forbid, but that there's not going to be a Geula through Mashiach. That is the Shita in the Gemara. Now, the Rambam quotes as one of the 13 Ikrim that we have to understand that there's going to be a Mashiach. So what does that mean, that this rabbi in the time of the Gemara was a Kofa?
Yeah.
It's quoted in the Gemara. So even the state of Israel, Sarah, cannot be Mashiach according to Hillel. So today, clearly, if someone espoused that view today, that will be unacceptable. But we don't try and sort of tipex, what you say in America, white out that view from the Gemara. It's there, it's a shooter. So here too, it's clear that we have certain shittas in Rishonim.
There's a lot of weird things in the Gemara that we totally don't go by.
Exactly. So why should you try and cover something up when it's clearly a minority opinion? We don't go like this. Now. Oh, so let me go on to the next stage. Because this is where I think it gets really contemporary and very interesting. Listen up. There was a rabbi in Europe, one of the early Hasidic Ashkenaz in the Middle Ages. Okay, one of the Rishonim called Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid was a very important Rishi. And we have many things from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. And one thing that was discovered in the 1970s is a manuscript. There are always manuscripts coming to light, things being discovered all the time. This is not an unusual thing. But in the 1970s, there was a Swiss Rav called Langer, Rabbi Langer, who discovered a print of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's Perush ala Torah, put together by his children, their father's opinions on different psukim in the Torah. This is very interesting. And what he did is he brought this manuscript to the princes, and he printed it, and he wanted to distribute it. Now, one of the things that in this print of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid are statements that follow that shita in the Ibn Ezra, that we saw in the Ibn Ezra. And by the way, which is in a few other Rishonim as well. Have a look for a second in number 5, in number 16, 17, and 19. Without getting into all of the details of that particular shita, of the particular issues, so first of all, he talks about the Jewish people went from Elat in Chumash, you should just know, Elat and Etzion Gaver, and he says that was in the land of Edom. And there's a whole discussion, was it in the land of Edom, was it not in the land of Edom, when did it become in the land of Edom? So if you look three lines from the bottom, number 16, so he says, four lines, at the end of the line, it says, this had not yet happened in the time of Moshe, but it happened before there was a king in Israel, which is interesting, because he's understanding that that statement, before there was a king in Israel, is indeed talking about King Shaul, okay, and maybe was put in later by a Navi, like we saw was possible. By the time of Shlomo, then Edom and Etzion Gave were already in Elat, were in place. Ulechem, look at the sheet, please. Number 16 in the end. Kosvu b'yamei Knesset Gedola. This pasuk was put in by the Anshei Knesset Gedola. Who were Nevi'im? The Chumash Shalaita Tamesa. You wouldn't think, Eich by Etzion Gave Edom. How did Etzion Gave match up with Edom? As it's written in Divrei HaYomim. So Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid seems to say, okay, here's another pasuk that was put in by the Nevi'im in the beginning of the Knesset HaGedolah. Look at number 17. It says, V'yasam Esef Ram Nifnei Menashe. In the story of Yaakov, stay with us, Natalia. Okay, good, excellent. In the, we've only got 5 minutes, and there's an important 5 minutes. When Ephraim is put before Menashe, so the usual pshat that we give that is that Yaakov put them before Menashe. So again, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid seems to say that, no, it's Moshe who put them before Menashe. Moshe put Ephraim before Menashe in the tribes. And he talks about how that could be. And who is saying he put Ephraim before Manasseh? So if you look here, again on the third line, he says, V'Yoshua Kasu. Yeshua writes this about Moshe, that Moshe placed Ephraim before Manasseh. Or Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, or maybe the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Because if you say that Moshe wrote it, it doesn't make any sense. He hears the whole thing. Finally, perhaps the most striking of all, in number 19, they went to the Be'er, they went to this well, on their journey through the desert. And they sang a shira after the well. What was the shira that they sang? Look at number 18. As Yoshe Yisrael es ha-shira ha-zois, alei be'er enu la. They sang this beautiful shira. Says Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, as Yashir es ha-shira ha-zois. So what is he saying? Zeu halel ha-gadol. What's halel ha-gadol? No, he doesn't mean that. Halel HaGadol is Hodu Lashem Kilitzitav Kili Lam Chazdoi. You know, the whole, all the 20, however many it is, all those, you know, that we sing, that we say in the Shabbos morning, Psuki de Zimra, we have this and we say it on Seder night, Halel HaGadol. Where is Halel HaGadol? Which book of the Tanakh is it in?
Tehillim.
He says they sang this, Zeu Halel HaGadol, Shela Acha, Shenitzlu, Misichon, Va'oik, after they've been saved by Sichon, from Sichon and Oik, Va'avru Nachal Amnon, they crossed through the Nachal, Azna says Ashir, they made it the Shir. U'bechumash Hayakar Ksiva. This Shir was originally in the. Elishu David HaMelech, Hisir Kolam Izmari. But David HaMelech took it out of the Chumash, okay, Shal Moshe, V'chibram B'Sefer Tehillim, Shela, and put it into Sefer Tehillim.
Plagiarism.
No, not plagiarism. He said, let's put it into the... Now, You can imagine that this manuscript of Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid caused some consternation when Rabbi Langer said he wanted to print it.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? So what happened? So let me tell you, and I need my 5 minutes to tell you this, okay? So even if we go 3 minutes over, I've got to finish this. It has to be a complete. Rav Moshe Feinstein was brought the manuscript in number 20. We're not going to read through the whole of number 20, but at some stage you need to. And Rav Moshe Feinstein goes through and analyzes, and he says, let's turn over to page 6. He says it's completely unacceptable. He says we go like the Rambam, that every letter in the Sefer Torah is min hashamayim, and absolutely that is the Psak Halacha, and that is the mainstream Hashkafic position. And he says it can't be that Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid wrote this. So by the way, that is a legitimate question. When you find manuscripts, it's always difficult to authenticate them. How do you know this wasn't put in by a Talmud who had funny ideas? That could be. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's not possible to say that Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid wrote this because this is Apikorsis. What about following the Shita of the Ibn Ezra, etc.? So Rav Moshe says, no, I'm not prepared to accept that this manuscript is authentic because Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid didn't say this and he could have been put in by someone else, maybe even maliciously. There's a forgery. Some Talmud introduced this in the name of Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid. And then he says in the end, he refers to the Sefer HaTzioni. Don't get upset. The Sefer HaTzioni is not a modern-day Zionist Sefer. The Sefer HaTzioni was a Sefer from the Middle Ages, okay? It's Rav Nachum Tzioni from Germany in the 14th century. And he quotes Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid saying these things. So how can it be a forgery? How can it be a bad manuscript when we have other people in the Middle Ages who quote Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid as having these views? So Rav Moshe says, I don't accept the Sefer. I don't know who the Sefer Tzioni is. And that's probably also, unacceptable. Rav Moshe is very unhappy. He doesn't want this to hit the streets because, you know, people who've not had this shear at MMY might not know what to do with this. So what's very interesting is that tshuva of Rav Moshe ended up in because most people will turn around and say that there's only one shita, which is that every pasuk is from Hashem, and there can never be any later nevuah, even though nevuah is from Hashem. Listen, 1 second. Rav Menashe Klein, who was a rabbi in Ungvar, I brought a lovely picture of them all at the end. You see Rav Menashe Klein?
Yeah.
Okay. Rav Menashe Klein is not a progressive, reform, conservative, open orthodox, modern orthodox, whatever you want to call, although I have deal between those terms, okay? He's a very, he's a Yerushalmi, Rav Menashe Klein is a Yerushalmi Charedi. And they brought Rav Moshe's tshuva in front of him, where it says that he doesn't accept the Sefer Tziyuni. And he says, I don't understand that. How can Rav Moshe Feinstein write that the Sefer Tziyuni is not authentic? And with some irony, he writes, it must be Talmud has forged Rav Moshe's tshuva and introduced into the Igros Moshe something which Rav Moshe never wanted to have there. Meaning, I think he said this like as if to say, like, come on, what's going on here? And about Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid, he says at the end, look at the end, very interesting, he says about Emet, Kilipeze Gamakis Eksav Yacha Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid, Ein Racha Koyle Ganzai, don't throw it in the Gemiza so quickly. Don't throw it away so quickly. Why? Because he says, look, there are certain things which are challenging, and the response to the challenge is not just to sort of pretend they're not there. And he quotes Sefer Yecheskel. Sefer Yecheskel was also, say Chazal, at one point going to be thrown into the Gemiza. Because it says things which are very controversial, seem to go against the Torah. So what did they do? So they brought hundreds of barrels of oil to have light, meaning they worked 24/7, and maybe they took Shabbos off, okay? But they worked around the clock in order to find ways of understanding how Sefer Yecheskel can be made to fit with some traditional Jewish understandings. And they said Sefer Yecheskel. So he said, if we could do that for Sefer Yecheskel, could we do it for Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid? Don't be so quick. Don't write it off. Maybe it's not a forgery. And they showed it to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach as well. Rav Shneel Lyman on yutorah.org has a fantastic share about this whole episode. You should read it, listen to that as well. They showed it to Rav Shlomo Zalman and he also said, something? I'm not prepared to write this off as a forgery, but I'm not happy for it to be printed, as it is, because, for some people this is too hard to handle. So what did they do in the end? They printed the Sefer, Rabbi Yehuda Chosid, they printed two versions, with the controversial bits, and without the controversial bits, with a note in the front to say, by Rabbi Langer, saying, this sefer, in this version of the sefer, some bits have been left out, and if you want to know what they are, you can call me up, etc., etc. And therefore, every copy of Rabbi Yehuda Chosid you can get on the shelves now is pretty much the one with the bits taken out. Okay, but you can still get hold of the other copy if you know who to ask, or if you it's there on the the CD-ROM, the big CD, not the Barilam, on the other. So at the end of the day, I brought you, just to finish off here, a tshuva by Rav Yuval Shurlo. Rav Yuval Shurlo is one of the Dati Lumi Rabbanim in Eretz Israel, very big name. And someone writes into him here and it says, look, you know, do I need to be bothered by the fact that there are shitas like the Ibn Ezra, maybe like Rabbi Yehuda Chosid, the Sefer Tzioni, whatever it is, do I need to be bothered by this? And Rav Shurlo writes back and he says, you know something, you should read this, Shaila. Don't worry about it. He says the mainstream position in Halacha and Hashkofa is clearly that of the Rambam, that the Sefer Torah is from Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu and passed down. He said that, but however, there are the shittas in the Rishonim. They're not mainstream, and we're not going to necessarily follow them. But you don't need to be scared of them. They're out there. And it says, look, at the end of the day, there is a nevuah, and the nevuah is from legitimate neviim, and we give these a lot of credence. And there are psukim here, and psukim there. He says, which we can turn around and say we're put in by later neviim. Now again, to most people today, this will be seen to be very, very unacceptable, and they'll probably get very upset about it. But I'm not sure that one needs to get upset about things that can be dealt with in a legitimate halachic and hashkafic framework. And the existence of minority shitas, especially when I think they are out there, you know, the people that you're talking to, you see people sometimes that come up with these statements like, oh, well, you know, the Ibn Ezra and this, that, and the other. And you need to say, you know something? The Ibn Ezra is an interesting shita. It needs to be gone into in detail. You can't just give it to me in sound bites. You need to look at the mafroshim, look at the sources, and understand when a minority sheet is a minority sheet, and when it becomes mainstream, etc. And that's the reason that I brought you this. So at the end of the day, I brought you for further iyun. If you're interested in this, you don't have to be interested in this, but if you are, Rav Bazak has some interesting shirim on the Gush website, and indeed has his book, where he has at least 60 or 70 pages dealing with this particular question specifically. And also I gave you a reference to Rabbi Lyman's, I've mentioned before, Rabbi Lyman in YU, is a gem of Torah. For people who are interested in he's a real academic, not a pretend one, and he's also a real Thanatophon. So if that's something that focuses you, then look at his shiur. All right, ladies, thank you very much.